Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Walt on 107.7 The End, and I am joined by right now by the lovely Lana Del Rey, who's graced her presence here in the studio. Welcome.
Thank you so much.
It's awesome.
I'm in Seattle.
I know. And it's a little gray, so we're kind of living up to what people expect.
Yep.
Just no rain.
Exactly.
No rain. So, congratulations on the new record.
Thank you.
Norman effing Rockwell, as we have to say here in safe radio land. Explain the title to me.
Well, when I was working with Jack Antonoff in the studio, I think we maybe had about four songs in the can, and I was writing Venice, Biatch.
Right.
And
a nine-minute song, by the way.
A nine-minute song, and... I threw a little line in there about paint me happy in blue like Norman Rockwell. And then as it happened, like my sister and I were taking a little weekend in Yosemite. And we had an 8-hour drive and I was talking to her about Norman Rockwell. We were listening to some documentaries as we were driving up. And I kind of started thinking about like a play on his name as a title and kind of a like with a little bit of thought in like where the American dream stands. So a little bit of an exclamation point on my version of what I'm living in the middle of the American dream.
Yeah, well,
this year.
It's such a fantastic album title when you think about it, because it's a phrase that you wouldn't actually put together, but it actually puts a contemporary twist on what we think as Norman Rockwell.
Yeah, yeah. And I feel lucky that no one was like, who the F is she to be like using Norman's name? You know, like, I mean, it just kind of was, every now and then, like a phrase or a title just speaks to you, and I thought, I hope they don't mind if I just, you know.
Has anybody from the estate reached out?
No, I think we reached out to them, and like, you know.
You guys cool with this?
At the time, it was so far so good. I mean, I definitely made sure to mention to them that I was really hoping the album ended up playing with a lot of integrity.
Right.
But obviously that's, you know, a matter of perspective.
Right.
And I don't know what I would think if someone like called an album Lana Del effing Ray, but
it's pretty cool.
It depends how good it was.
It's pretty cool. All right. Yeah. So you mentioned you work with Jack Antonoff on this record.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
I met Jack every year. I try and go to this like one big party that's before the Grammys. It's the Clive Davis party.
Sure.
So I went down to New York and did that. And then he came up to my table and introduced himself and asked if we could have breakfast the next day and said he was really sure if we got in the studio, we would do something good. And I told him I wasn't writing because I was in the middle of like a really long winter tour. But I ended up meeting him, and then the next day I had another day off, and I went down to his studio in Brooklyn, and I played him the one song I had written, which is Hope is a Dangerous Thing for a Woman Like Me to Have, and he loved it, and he played piano, and then we ended up, he had a chord progression, like a four chord progression, and we ended up writing the title track, Norman, and I went home and I thought, this is really different for me. Like, it's very easy.
Right.
And then within 6 months, I kind of knew what the whole record was going to sound like and just kind of unexpectedly felt like, wow, I'm doing another back-to-back album again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it felt natural. He felt like he coaxed the best out of you.
I mean,
it seems like
to say the least. Like, especially at a time where... it's never any fun not to have anything in your bank to write.
Right.
But he actually, I was really surprised. Like, he has a kind of 60s sensibility within him, which I wasn't sure if it was going to, like, lean too heavy towards, like, a banger or whatever, which I'm, you know, it's fun, but I was more, like, writing long-form stuff, hence, like,
well,
Venice.
This record feels so comfortable for you.
Yeah.
It's got a very... it's kind of like a throwback 70s vibe a little bit.
Yeah.
Very California Canyon-esque.
Yeah.
Is that who you are? Is that by design? Did you think about that consciously as you were creating this record?
It's a lot of who I am. I kind of have a lot of worlds going on at one time. But when I'm in LA, my sister and I were in Laurel Canyon for a minute, and so were a couple of other musicians. And you know, Jonathan Wilson, this mm-hmm. artist, and I, we would always talk about doing this Laurel Canyon revival night, because he did that for like 10 years before he moved to Echo Park. So I guess it was kind of on my mind. And then that paired with just like encouraging Jack not to go bigger with the production.
Right.
I think it ended up sounding a lot more casual than I thought. And I, like, I'm having fun with it on stage, even though it means I'm not moving around as much. So I think it was kind of like, it's really one of those meant to be things for me.
Well, it's interesting because I'm going to jump around here because I had this planned out, but now you just touched on something. One of the things I love is about your music is that it seems always honest, and it's always who you are. You know what your sound is and what your songs should sound like.
Yeah.
Do you ever feel like get in the trap of like, oh, well, I need to do a song with a trap beat now, or use auto-tune, or do whatever the fad of the day is?
I get a little nervous when my own sensibility swings so hard. You know, like, I'll find myself for like 2 years at a time listening only to trap music. And
right.
So like I'll want like really badly like a trap influence or whatever. And I'm kind of like, it is a little unnerving sometimes, like how wide I feel like I could go, like
right.
from country to
totally get it
to anything. So especially when I'm on stage and I'm in my like boots and I'm going from a song like Bartender to like a real hip hop sampled song.
Right.
But, I mean,
so you've done a good job staying out of that trap.
Yeah, I try and, like, at least write, at least have the words be something that, and the melodies be pretty authentic to, like.
Have you ever done a song that you're like, this isn't for anybody else to hear, but this is me doing a metal song or something completely left field?
I mean, so many times. Especially when I was writing for fun, like in 2010 and 11. I didn't even know if I was writing for myself or for somebody else. And some of the stuff I hear, I'm like, whew, girl, you're lucky. You're lucky you made it.
Bury that one. You also worked with Zach Dawes on this record, who I love. His work with Mini Mansions, Last Shadow Puppets, Alexandra Savior. Come on.
That's my buddy.
And he's pretty awesome.
Yeah, him and his girlfriend are like one of the things that makes L.A. fun for me.
Really?
They don't live far, and I had a little side band with him and Miles Kane.
Oh, yeah?
And Lauren, who is a drummer now with Florence. So we were just kind of hanging around when we all had a year off. And we did California together. That's a song on the record.
Right.
And, I mean, our little side band has like 11, talk about like a different style. I don't even know what I would call it. Like rockabilly, English rockabilly.
English rockabilly, sure.
So he's really cool.
That's cool. You surrounded yourself with good people on this record.
Yeah, LA's been fun.
14 songs on this record, and it clocks in well over an hour.
Oof, well over.
So when did you start working on this thing, and did it just flow naturally? I mean, at some point where you're like, all right, we have to stop because we're at 10 songs or whatever.
Yeah, I wanted to stop at 11, and then I had a song from 3 years ago called The Next Best American Record, and I just thought, I just wanted it to be on the album, but it was close to 6 minutes.
Right.
And then Zach's song, California, we did that when we were working on our side project, so that's probably, 2.5 years old. But again, I thought, like at the time in that period, two, three years ago, I was kind of edging towards something a little more singer-songwriter-ish.
Right.
So, I think it was going to be like 11, 12, and then ended up.
Was there anything left behind?
Yes. Like there was some real big, 60s Shangri-Las pop stuff, kind of like the title track of my last album, Lust for Life,
sure, yeah.
Which I was kind of trying to do a bit of a girl group sound. I thought it was either going to go kind of like hip-hop girl group or like something, a little more acoustic. And in the end, there were just more songs that were like that. And I think the next album, whatever that ends up being, I think it'll still be more in this realm because I'm having so much fun.
Yeah, you've definitely tapped into something here. And I think all the songs that are on out of the entire 14, I think they all fit. I mean, they all fit in this package.
Yeah.
You've also done a lot of music videos for the songs on this record. Is that visual component important to you?
Well, it's getting stranger and stranger to make videos, I'll be honest. It's like, I've been to Nevada, was with all the bikers, I was in a pool with crocodiles, you know, been in a castle with tigers. So actually, my sister is a cool little director, Chuck, and for three of the videos, we just rented out a cool parking lot on Alameda, and we did it on our, we shot some of it on our phones, which was sort of like the looped videos for Mariner's Apartment in Venice. So we have like a 15-minute version that those loops are from. That's going to come out for Norman, Bartender, and Happiness is a Butterfly. So I think when I'm with her, like, I feel definitely very casual. And then when I think of like real big concepts, I'm kind of like, is anyone, you know, getting tired of these?
Right?
But I have fun. Every time I'm on a video set, I really, it's surreal. I think to myself, there's all these people here. And
I always loved reading the treatments that video directors would give you for a song. Like, okay, now we're going to have a little person with a mackerel beating themselves in the head. What do I have to do? Okay.
Yeah. Funny. Poor Rich Lee. I'm the one giving him treatments. I'm like, and then we're going to be, then I'm going to be a ghost on the Hollywood sign, but I want the real sign.
Right.
And he's like, oh, so expensive.
The budget is only what it is.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. All right, so let's talk about the cover of Doin' Time, which when I first heard this song earlier this year, I thought, all right, this is such the right song for you.
Really?
And this is going to be the song of the summer. Aww. And thank you for proving me right.
Thank you.
Because it is a huge song that has got no, it's not losing steam at all. How did this song come about?
Well, John Janik, who runs Interscope, he's awesome. He called me and asked me if I thought I could record a Sublime cover. This was like well after I was done with my album. But he said he needed it in a few days, and he really wanted Andrew Watt to do it, who I know from like around town but had never worked with. So, I mean, it was just for a documentary because I think Interscope's, they're putting out that doc. So I said sure and just went up to Andrew's house, but I definitely had it in the back of my mind that like this could go one way or another. I love Sublime. So I ended up doing the cover, and I think before it was out, we were talking earlier about David Kahn, but I got an email from my first producer, David Kahn, from when I was 20. He made my first album that came out in like 2008, seven maybe.
Right.
And all he said was, you know, I hope you ended up doing it. I really wanted you to do it. And so did Bradley's former wife and stuff.
Wow.
So I thought, and I said, really? And you still have my email? This is crazy.
You haven't changed your email in all those years.
No. So it really came full circle in that way. And also, I think it's, first of all, I think anytime anything of mine gets on the radio is really crazy, you know? And it's funny that this one is, like, it could almost be called Summertime.
Right.
You know?
I've always thought of the song. It's Summertime. It's the Summertime song from Sublime.
And
but the timing was perfect on it, I thought. And and your treatment of it, it's true enough to the original, but yet it has your flavor, your flair, and your sound on it.
Some
and
strings.
So I think it worked. Yeah.
Thank you.
Worked so well. You have wild success touring. You've been touring for many years, and you do these big shows.
Yeah.
Which do you prefer? Do you prefer to be creating in the studio, or do you like performing live?
Once I get in the groove of being live, I'm super happy. But I need to, like, mix it up. So, like, we did an arena in Vancouver, but when we do the Midwest, it's going to be, like, 1,500 capacity bars and theaters and stuff. So I think, like, that balances it out. Because, like, I still need to keep my feet on the ground and like be in the bus and not just fly in on the day of.
Flying is hard. Flying gigs are tough.
I'm not a big flyer, so
I'm with you.
But being in the studio is just, I mean, I feel super spoiled too, because like Jack will come to town for a week and I just get to go not more than 2 miles away and It's like sometimes we don't even record. We just kind of chat. And then the next day we'll maybe get something.
It's all setting it up for when you do push play on the on the computer.
Yeah.
So tonight you're playing the WAMU Theater. What can we expect from the show tonight?
It's going to be more of a folky start. I'm going to do a little Joni Mitchell cover, which I don't usually do covers at the shows. New song called For Free. And but the next time you hear it, I'm going to have my girls with me, Zella Day and Wise Blood. They're coming to
Zella.
Yeah, she's like, they're very inspiring to me. They're going to come to the bowl.
Okay.
So I'm going to do that. And then, you know, I think my show's running at about like an hour and a half.
Wow, great.
I sound like a disc jockey. I'm like, our show.
It's fine. It's fine. You can take over my job when I'm done. Perfect. Well, what's the plan for the next year? I mean, the record just came out, so I'm sure you're going to be supporting this for a while.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, we're going to the Midwest. Nobody knows, but we are in November. So see you in Des Moines. Please come down. You know, Kansas, Oklahoma. And then we're going to do Europe in February. So, yeah, a lot of small shows, and I'm still just kind of plugging away at whatever the next new sound is.
Well, I'm super excited to get a chance to meet you, talk with you, and hear this record and where your music is going. I think it's fantastic.
Thank you so much.
Lana, thanks for spending some time with us here on 107.7 The End.
Absolutely.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.